PFT Media.
You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
Chris Crespo Radio Show. Everybody likes it. Listen to shit.
Welcome to Cinema Crespediso.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is here. We're doing episode 394. You ask for more, and it's going right now with Drew Sir Cogburn. How you doing, Drew?
Hey there, I'm Chris.
I did that semi on purpose. I was trying to do, but it didn't come out so good.
No.
Hey guys, it's me. It's Chris. That's true. You're you, and this is the thing that we. I was going to say, dude,
no, we should, we,
that's another rhyme.
we should just rename the podcast Chris, Drew, and You.
Chris, Drew, and You. That's the new show. Chris, welcome to Chris, Drew, and You, our weekly affirmation show of good blessings and tidings.
Drew
is here with his hashtag Be Blessed Tip of the Week, Trisha Cogburn. What you pull from your Pinterest board for our Be Blessed Tip of the Week?
Number one, I don't have a Pinterest board.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tip number one, don't have a Pinterest board.
Number two, if you do have a Pinterest board, mm-hmm. you should just kill yourself now.
Whoa, not a fan of the ladies in the audience on what, Chris, Drew, and You?
I have no idea.
That's the end of that show. Not even that episode. That show was done. That was our main audience.
That's what I was going for. I was going for the end of the episode.
And Drew told them all kill themselves. Well, here we go. We have some things to talk about. We are going to review one of the more well-reviewed and biggest blockbuster movies of the summer. That's right. A24's First Cow. That's how 2020 works.
Summer blockbuster.
Summer blockbuster. The biggest movie of the summer.
A24's First Cow.
First Cow.
This isn't Super Cow.
No.
This isn't Super Cow versus Ultron.
Super Cow would be cool. I would be like, yeah. Yeah, man. Super Cow gets recruited.
Into the Avengers.
Into the Avengers. Crossover with the Transformers. Now that's happening. Now it's...
Transformers 1835.
Okay, see, we're getting there. I mean, we did Arthurian,
yeah.
So why not? That's almost an improvement. Kelly Reichardt, the writer director, has made a handful of movies, going back to, I don't know, 15 years now. Old Joy, Wendy and Lucy. You ever see that one? Mm-hmm. Michelle Williams and a dog in the woods. Our movies are about like poor white people in the woods in the Northwest
with animals.
Sometimes, yes.
Okay. Sometimes,
yes. Definitely a nature-animal component going on there often.
Okay.
This one is based on the book, apparently, but, I mean, it's right in line with all of her other stuff. It's 1830s, right?
Yeah. Well,
roughly?
Yeah, maybe even before.
I thought someone maybe mentioned the year.
Maybe like early 1800s?
It's Oregon Trail, Oregon Territory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little kind of trappers. It's a little town. There's trappers there and stuff. And where our main character.
Well, there's a port there, too. There's some sort of port. There has to be.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's coastal. There has to be. Yeah, because the delivery of the cow, we see it. We see him coming in on the water. Yeah. So it's a movie in which we follow this one guy whose name is Cookie. Is that because he's a cook?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's a cookie.
He said his actual name
in the movie a few times, but
everybody's called him Cookie.
It's like everyone calls me Cookie.
Because he's a cook.
He's like, okay, Cookie. So he's the cook for the trappers, and he's like a softer guy amongst all the hard dudes.
Looks a lot like Shia LaBeouf.
He does look like a
he looks a thicker like a soft faced. Thicker Shia.
He's like baby fat face Shia.
Well, not even baby fat. Like his eyes. His eyes are very. They're not as intense. You know. Shia LaBeouf has very intense eyes.
Yes, he's.
This guy's eyes are very soft.
Sad. Perfect casting for, I guess, this type of role. Mm-hmm. Where he befriends a dude, and the two of them. This is just a bare bones of the plot. The two of them start a oily cake business. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By appropriating milk
from said cow,
from the first cow, the cow that they do not own, mm-hmm. so they don't own that milk. So it's a weird story of entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm. Friendship as well.
Friendship,
entrepreneurial incentive. I mean, it's...
Trying to start from nothing to build something.
It's the American dream, dude.
It is. This movie is the American dream in many ways, but it's a very slow-paced version.
Oh, yes. Very, very, very deliberately placed.
It's like, it's like we're going to take our time with this. This guy's going to look for mushrooms for about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to eat one, maybe.
Perhaps, if he's hungry.
A lot of close-up shots of these mushrooms and fields of tall grass and stuff. I'm pretty sure it was all shot and had it been shot in film. It looked really, looked really
good. Well, and like you said, most of it was square frame, probably 16 millimeter.
I think so. I think those film stocks use those square frames. So it's one of those things where on the film Twitter and amongst the film intelligentsia, the glitterati, this movie has been like, oh yeah, this is a fantastic masterpiece.
Masterpiece, I don't know about that.
That's a word I kept saying throwing out there.
I understand why the art house film nerds love this movie.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah.
I understand.
I get the appeal to some.
Yes.
I can also see why when we pulled it up on Amazon to watch it on VOD, it had like a 2.5-star rating.
Yes.
Because this is not the type of
movie for
the masses.
Yeah, no. No, this
is... not going to get on board the Kelly Reichardt train.
This is an art house movie. Like, somebody just watching this would be like a Robert Pattinson fan who knows him from Twilight being like, here's High Life.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Yeah, and people are like, what?
Excuse me?
I have no cultural frame of reference for this. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's like, I've seen Meek's Cutoff. I know type of movies this lady makes.
I get it.
And there's like a handful of filmmakers. It's like your Lars von Trier's and Gaspar Noé's are pretty extreme. Oh. But there's people like them, and there's certain filmmakers who they have a style, and they make movies that I like appreciate what they're doing, and I'm glad that they're out there doing it, and I'll even watch most of their movies. But at the end of the day,
I sound like I'm going to buy it.
I'm not really a fan of almost any of it.
Yeah.
And this one, it's the same way. I think Night Moves may be the favorite movie. That she's done.
A little more action, that's why. It's a little more tense.
Slightly more. I like this one, also based on a book, which is probably why this First Cow and Night Moves have like the most mainstream accessibility.
I think
you can say it's almost like Jim Jarmusch, a bunch of his movies. Yeah. Like some of them I love, but then others I'm like, oh, good. Mm-hmm. I could have done without in my life.
Totally get why A24 produced this movie. This is right in their wheelhouse.
It's an A24 movie. Kelly Reichardt, it's like perfect type of filmmaker for them. I can say, make her movies. First of all, they can't cost that much. How much did that thing cost? Like,
couple hundred thousand dollars. I mean, shit. Film stock probably cost the most.
Yeah, the film stock and the cow, making sure the cow's fed properly. The cow's probably the best fed living thing on that set. Yeah, it was okay. I mean, I can't rave about her, but like, but then there's a chance that someone listening to this could watch it, and then they might fall in love with it.
If you like movies that are deliberately paced, have beautiful nature scenes,
good acting,
a little bit long in the tooth.
Because it's 2 hours.
There's hardly...
Could have been an hour and a half.
There's a little bit of quote-unquote action, but it's not really action per se.
Yeah, you get some good Toby Jones.
I mean, there's some great acting and a decent little story. Mm-hmm. I do like the
particulars of like starting the oily cakes business.
If you're into weird little art house movies, this will be right up your alley.
People who will like this for sure.
If you like going to the movies for Die Hard and the Avengers, then this is not your type of film.
Don't even bother. It's not. Yeah, don't even come close to checking this thing out. Most likely because it's not. You're not going to get anything that you want. You're going to get an ending that's sort of not abrupt because we saw it coming.
All I'm saying, Chris, is
not as much closure as one would probably hope for in a normal movie.
I mean,
you know.
I'll tell you what.
Like you can extrapolate what's going to happen.
I'm definitely glad we watched this on a big screen in my place so we could have some conversations during the slow-ass film and not worry about ruining anybody else's film viewing pleasure.
Or missing like monologues or big important scenes because it's just taking our time walking through the woods here. I would put it on the... I would say it's okay. Okay to good. It's above the fine scale. It's okay. It's okay.
I'm there.
It's all right.
I got you. I understand.
So here you go, first count available on VOD. That was what, like
six bucks?
Yeah, I mean, for that, the two of us watch it, we split it $3 each.
Fine.
Like, what the hell?
Totally worth it.
The cheaper than my cup of coffee I bought this morning. The let's get into our media diets this week. I watched, it came out on Netflix on Monday. It was on ESPN like a couple months ago. The Last Dance.
I have not started it yet.
Holy cow, Drusen Kiner.
Looking forward to watching that probably this week sometime.
That thing was so good. I think it's good enough for even people who aren't like fans of basketball and stuff.
Well, I mean, it's like just from some sports documentaries, when they're made well, they can be really exciting and fun to watch. And this looked like one of those.
Yes, regardless of the detail of the sport itself.
Yeah.
Because they find the story surrounding the whole thing.
Exactly.
This thing, it's crazy. So it's 10 episodes, 45 minutes. We're getting ready to start. It's like, man, 10 episodes. Here, this is going to be a lot.
But I'm sure it just goes. Like, I'm sure at the end of the episode, you're like, I got to know. I'm sure it's just like Tiger King, where it's like, I have to know what happens next.
They ended a lot on cliffhangers.
I already know what happens next because I lived through it. But at the same time, the way
they frame it, yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Living through it is also like, oh, I remember this game. I remember this. Then getting the stories behind those things are very interesting.
Well, and it's, me growing up in Sarasota too. But part of the whole Michael Jordan story happened in Sarasota.
Unfortunately, they didn't show any of him playing in Sarasota. They showed him playing in Birmingham, Alabama. Yeah. Instead,
he played what? That's
because that was the that was a double A team.
Yeah,
I think.
That was because he was playing triple A down there.
They didn't show any triple A,
or was it single A? Whatever the worst
they,
one
they
is.
Started him at no the worst is A.
Okay,
they started him at double. So I think Sarasota probably be the triple A
yeah,
team.
It was.
And they didn't show anything because I was like, watching with my brother, I was like, Joey, see if you see like a little skinny kid chasing down a ball.
laughing at a grown man playing baseball.
Laughing at a grown man who can't hit a breaking ball because that would be Juicer Cogburn. Yeah. But they didn't have any.
Yeah.
And so here's the thing, though. I feel like they could have done a whole episode on...
Just the baseball
on
stuff.
On the baseball stuff. They could have done a whole episode on so many things.
Dude, they could have done a whole fucking series on the baseball stuff between him going to... I mean, the amount of money that he fucking burned playing baseball is ridiculous.
Well,
like, when he played at AAA with the White Sox, like, he redid a bunch of shit at Ed Smith Stadium, fucking got them a new bus, all this bullshit, because he's fucking Michael Jordan.
That's very interesting. They could have gone so... much deeper on so many things. Like the series could have been twice the length. It could have been 20 episodes instead of doing just chunk of an episode on Scottie Pippen and chunk of it on Dennis Rodman. They could have done entire episodes on all these guys. Gotten deeper into so many things.
I'm sure budget constraints, things of that nature.
It's already so expansive at 10 episodes, 45 to 50 minutes each. It was so compelling. I loved watching it and was sad when it was over. So
looking forward to it.
The Last Dance. I read this book this week, Kings of the Wild. Wild spelled WYLD, written by this guy Nicholas Eames. I think he's English. Nicholas Eames, probably. He's probably from Virginia. It's a fantasy book. A big plus about it, Drew, is that it is a single book. It's not part of a trilogy.
Oh, cool. So it's just a nice closed story at the end. You don't have to be like, well, what happens to so-and-so? Oh, I guess I got to wait another 3 years to find out.
Exactly.
Oh, and this is garbage.
Yeah, now I have to wait for the next Black Panther, Red Wolf for a few years.
Yeah.
That's fine. I can have one or two of those in my life. But this one, no. There is a book... that's like, here's the story of the person that happened concurrently to this.
So it's a side story.
Yeah, if you want to read this story,
you can
if you want to. I might read it. I don't know. But this one is very good. Kings of the Wild. And it's a world where it's a fantasy world. It's J.R.R. Tolkien, all that stuff. It's about a band of, literally, in the sense of word, band of people, fighters, who are mercenaries. And they are... all have names and nicknames, and the bands have group names, and then they are treated as rock stars in this world. So they talk about getting the band back together, and each band has a front man.
The leader.
Yeah, exactly. And then every band also has a bard and a wizard, so it's like the different...
Yeah.
They all have positions, every band that gets filled. The names are fun. The main band, it's like the old band getting back together, is called Saga. There's another one called Vanguard, a bunch of girls that are like thieves in the woods, or Lady Jane and the Silver Arrows. So they all have like really fun, cool names. Mm-hmm. It's also really like, it's a funny book, like well written. It's pretty witty and humorous, inventive, and they use a lot of, I think almost exclusively, like real like actual mythical, instead of making up like Black Leopard, Red Wolf, which I read recently, was a lot of like made up stuff, or just like a lot of really deep African lore that people don't know. This one is like straight up. Here's, we got chimeras and gorgons,
exactly, and like stuff that you're familiar with.
Yeah, you can like, and then if you read something like, I don't know what that is, you can go to Google and do an image search and like, oh, there it is. That's gross looking. It's a lot of fun.
Monsters.
So chimeras have a few. There's a great description of dragons versus wyverns.
It sounds like someone took the term fantasy metal literally.
Yes.
It was like, instead of writing a song about this, let's write an actual story.
Yeah, it was good.
Does Dragon Force show up riding dragons using all sorts of weird shit?
They should. There definitely are dragons. One guy's riding the wyvern. I don't know how to say it.
Now I'm just imagine like actual dudes riding dragons shooting lightning out of their guitars in actual battle.
That would be like, you could do that. That's like adjacent to this, essentially. So I really, really enjoyed it. It's really good. 480 something pages, but again, it's just a one story and wrapped up very satisfyingly. I really liked it. It's only a few years old, too. I think for 2017.
Cool.
Kind of recently. Mm-hmm. So, Kings of the Wild, Nicholas Eames. I read that. Watch a couple episodes of a show on Netflix called Flinch.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
No.
It's, it's okay. It's, Irish.
Okay.
Show shot in the UK. Shot in Ireland. Dumb, and it, so since it also is UK, it has that editing style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it feels very British. It's very British. It is, and it's about contestants where they go through three rounds of really dumb challenges to see if they can just like not flinch literally. Mm-hmm. And one of them is just like putting steam whistles next to them, they're like, and if they flinch, they get penalized in some way. And sometimes if they flinch during the penalization process, that counts too.
Again.
So it's pretty ridiculous.
People getting freaked out and scared.
But then by the second episode, there's this one dude, like this Sikh guy, Sandeep, who he was just cool through the whole thing. I was like, I like this guy.
Cool as cucumber.
It's so weird how just like a couple episodes, this dumb show, stupid premise, and by the second episode,
you're in.
I was like, I can cheer this guy. I like his style. There are a handful of laughs to be had. But after only two apps, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there for people. Heads up.
No.
It's there. The eye is upside down. Take that for what you will. Flinch. And that's it for me. I mean, 10 hours of Michael Jordan and a 500-page fantasy book this week.
I mean, 5 hours...
On top of all our other normal stuff.
5 hours of Michael Jordan takes away, like, five of the things that I watched. So...
Oh, yeah. So you want variety, or do you want the epic journey of Air Jordan?
You watched 8 full hours of, pretty much.
It was awesome, man. It was so
and cool. So, I mean, that takes off, like... Oh, about half of what I watched.
Well, then
so
let's see. What did you watch? What'd you get?
Oh, I fell down another anime wormhole.
Nice. Anime wormhole part two, the Jujutsu Kaisen edition.
I did some more research on some of the stuff that I enjoyed. So, and you know, now that I am a follower of filmmakers auteur theory, I started watching stuff made by some of the directors of some of the stuff that I really did like.
Such as?
I watched this thing called Robot Carnival. It's from 1987, 1 hour, 31 minutes. It's pretty much the original Love, Death, and Robots. It's
anthology?
Eight episodes. It's an anthology, and it's just...
It's a series. Eight stories.
It's eight stories.
One movie. Gotcha,
yeah,
gotcha,
eight stories
gotcha,
in one
gotcha,
movie.
Gotcha.
The opening and closing is done by the guy who ended up doing Akira, and... Ooh. One of them called Presence is done by the guy who did Ninja Scroll and some other things.
Nice.
Which I'll get into.
Excellent.
So, but that was really good. All this stuff is very much for adults. I wouldn't let
Your kids watch it.
Children watch any of. Well,
maybe grandma, but
maybe
not the kids.
Maybe a couple of these things, but I'll get to those at the end. Most of this stuff, very much adult, very violent.
Yeah.
very much nudity. Some of these even have some... We'll get into it.
Very much nudity.
After that, watched Street Fighter II, the animated movie from 1994.
Okay.
This is on, most of this stuff I watched on Tubi, just so you know.
All right. Heads up, people. Tubi, free app to use.
Yes. So it said it's only rated PG-13, but there was violence, nudity, and language in this movie.
Like nipples?
Yes, straight up.
Wow.
Yeah.
What were happening to those nipples? Were they getting sucked or were they getting punched?
No,
was it sexual or were they just nude?
It was semi-sexual. It was Chun-Li was taking a shower.
That is semi-sexual.
Yeah.
My favorite kind of chocolate morsels.
Mm-hmm.
Semi-sexual.
But yeah, I was surprised it was only rated PG-13. But yeah, this is
interesting.
But it's a Street Fighter II movie. It's
looser standards in '94.
Yeah. I mean, it's super violent. It pretty much follows the standard, I guess, story. You know, Bison's the bad guy.
Okay.
Chun-Li works for some government. Ken and Ryu.
Sure.
Are estranged but used to be best friends.
Yeah,
the basics.
Yeah.
You know, you throw in the other characters for fun and fights and blood. And,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
You go for it. Yeah, but it was worth totally worth watching. I enjoyed it
much better than the movie. I'm guessing.
I actually watched the whole thing, Chris.
You didn't.
I didn't walk out.
Did it walk out of your own house?
And this was an hour and 41 minutes.
Oh wow!
So,
okay, wow.
And I watched it.
All right. And the animation software would be 94.
Yeah, so, I mean, think of just, like, the 90s anime style. So, you know, your Ninja Scrolls, your Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, like Japanese, though.
Yeah.
Japanese animation.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, watched a movie called Redline.
The racing movie?
Yes.
I saw that at the first Florida Film Festival I covered, maybe the second one.
Is it an anime?
Yeah.
Okay.
The racing movie.
Yeah, from 2011, 1 hour, 42 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Futuristic sci-fi racing.
Mm-hmm. They had those... capsules that they drop into it's like the nitrous capsules.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a fan of that one.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, actually. And
they had to go, part of the race was going through War World, and War World's like, we're not having this race.
No, it was Robot World.
Was it Robot World? Yeah.
And basically, in Robot World, it was, they were post-human. So they weren't violent, per se, but they were definitely fascist because the way they enforced everything was through violence.
Yeah, the ultimate, authority.
Yeah, but it reminded me a lot of the goddamn Speed Racer.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The Wachowskis.
Absolutely.
Speed Racer.
Yeah, the racing scenes.
Yeah,
and
the way it all worked out.
The tracks and stuff.
Going super fast and fucking the
crazy
last
high
race
tracks
at the end. The fucking dude was his racing machine at the end. He's the right up front and fucking insane.
Yeah,
it was bonkers. Really good animation, really violent, a lot of fun.
Very fun. Also, for sure, that one's got tits in it too.
Yes. Yes, animated titties.
Yeah.
100%.
I remember seeing that there was a very sparse screening at the film fest. I don't even think they've shown an anime movie since
like,
then.
Whoa.
And I remember sitting there and then it's just a scene where a girl's on the couch like talking on a phone.
Yeah,
or
she's just like smoking a cigarette, watching TV.
Topless.
Yeah, but she's topless.
And someone in the theater just sort of like, oh, huge animated titties.
Yeah.
In the middle of the... All right, here we go.
Yep, animated here we titties. Go. That's what we get.
I enjoy Redline.
Yeah, it was fun.
Very cool.
So yeah, all the rest of these movies, like, not for kids, by the way.
Yeah, guys, people.
Just so you know.
Redline, yes. The rest, no.
Well, even Redline, a little bit. Depending on whatever.
You have to explain why his blood vessels are breaking in his head as he's going so fast. And blood starts coming out of his nose and his eyes.
Yeah. Watched Afro Samurai, Resurrection.
All right.
So apparently after the TV series, they did a movie in 2009. Hour and 41 minutes.
Okay.
Samuel Jackson comes back. Sure. Lucy Liu's the bad girl.
Nice.
And the RZA's in it as well.
Very nice.
It's
Afro Samurai School.
Available on Tubi and Hulu right now.
I wonder if that would be on HBO Max too. Probably not, because they don't have their Adult Swim section's pretty limited.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It's like they're pushing Boondocks pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. Robot Chicken, I guess.
From the guy who made Ninja Scroll.
From one of the producers. Oh, the guy who made it.
Okay. Yeah, the guy who made Ninja Scroll.
I like when trailers say that. From one of the producers of Happy Gilmore. Like, which one, though?
So Ninja Scroll was his third movie. And if you've seen Ninja Scroll, you know that there's heavy violence.
Yes.
Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Nudity.
Yep.
Little bit of monster rape,
a little bit,
that monster rape is part of the story because that's how the monster gets poisoned at the end and ends up dying, and he's the main bad guy. So it kind of is
it's important.
Important.
There's no way around it.
I mean, there is definitely a way around it, but it is important to the story.
Yes, it wasn't just a thing.
Yeah. So
it wasn't just a side journey into monster rape.
So Ninja Scroll is this dude's happy medium?
Mm-hmm. Between the other, what, his first
two? So his first two movies, first one, Wicked City, 1987.
1987, 1 year before Akira, I think. Maybe?
There's a secret demon police guy, the Blackguard. Think of...
secret demon police.
Think MIB Paranormal. Okay? So think RIPD, but MIB.
So MIB, they're the secret alien feds.
Yes.
So this is the
secret demon police.
Almost, yeah, RIPD-ish.
Yes.
Secret demon police.
Secret demon police. Right. Called the Blackguard.
Okay.
There is a creepy old pervert, very much like Master Roshi from...
Sure, yeah.
So that, but taken to rated R levels.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Very grabby, very, I mean, literally talking about demon pussy.
Whoa!
There is violence, there's nudity, there's sex, there is attempted rape, there is actual rape.
Trigger warning.
Borderline hentai. Mm-hmm. There's a tentacle rape scene.
Yeesh.
I draw the line of tentacle rape, Chris. Rape's not for me.
I mean, come on.
How about
like vines, sentient plant vines?
No sentient plant vines. No sentient plant vines.
They're not exactly tentacles.
Two monsters do pull an Eiffel Tower on a girl, though.
Oh, right.
So,
high five.
That's fun.
Up top.
There's a vagina monster.
Well, that's just, I mean, Star Wars has a vagina monster.
But the animation's fucking gorgeous.
Yeah.
So there's that. This guy to the extreme.
And how's the story? Like, was it interesting?
Or
are you just watching for a spectacle?
It was a generic Men in Black type thing. You know, there's a bad guy. We have to save the world. Blah, blah, blah. Hunt the demons. Learn something about yourself. Save the girl.
Save the girl. Always save the girl.
Who gets raped a bunch. So.
All right.
That one went too far.
87.
Yes.
That was his first one.
Yeah.
People were like, you're good. But you were crazy.
Exactly. So, and then, so he did 1988, Demon City Shinjuku.
Okay.
A young warrior fights demons. There's violence, almost nudity. There's language. We've got fantasy elements, apocalypse, evil psychics. It's, once again, beautifully animated. Fucking gorgeous.
Like, same style, even?
This guy has a style.
Yeah, so like, all stuff like looks
similar. Looks the same. Okay. Yes.
Gotcha.
And so, like I said, no nudity, a little bit of language, violence, but not horrific violence. So he toned it way back.
Okay.
And people were probably like, okay, that's good, but it's not quite.
It's missing something.
It's missing something.
What you did before had an edge to it. And this isn't just something more to the tame.
And then after that,
Jiminy Glick giving his review.
After that, he did. I'm pretty sure. Oh, actually, I think Ninja Scroll was his fourth. Because I think after this, he did a win named Amnesia, which I talked about last week.
You did mention that last week, yes.
And then I think it was Ninja Scroll.
Okay.
But this guy has also gone to do stuff on the Animatrix. Mm-hmm. He was a director on one of the things on Batman Gotham Knight, because that was kind of a
anthology.
An
thing.
Anthology, yeah. As well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's gone on to do some other stuff that you've seen.
Wow.
And it's pretty good.
All right. Rank them. The Wicked City, Demon City, Shinjuku, Ninja Scroll, rank them.
Ninja Scroll,
number one,
then Demon City, then Wind Named Amnesia, and then...
Oh,
Wicked City.
Okay.
And the only reason why... Wicked City, it looks cool, and the action's awesome. It's just, I'm not down with tentacle rape.
Hey, yeah, we get it. It's fine.
Or
no one says rape. No one says they have to be. No one says they gotta be.
There's a line that gets crossed in anime sometimes, and I'm not for that.
They love crossing that line.
Yeah.
It's like so easy to just draw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they cross it again in this. I also watched on Tubi.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-part. I think it was on TV. But it's a two-part series called Kite. It's from 1998, 46 minutes. It was...
1998?
Yes. Done by a man named Yasumi Unetsu. He did... the thing called Presence on Robot Carnival.
Okay.
So he did work on Robot Carnival as okay. well. But Quentin Tarantino actually used this story for the basis of Lucy Liu's backstory in Kill Bill.
For and the half-Chinese, half-Japanese American citizen? Uh-huh. Right, American?
And then the uniform that Gogo wears is inspired by this anime. But it's basically mm-hmm. about a teenage girl. She's mm-hmm. about 14 mm-hmm. when her parents are killed.
Dope.
And she gets taken in by a cop who teaches her how to kill child molesters, basically.
Oh.
But in doing so, also in the beginning, rapes her at 14, and then uses her as, I mean, quote unquote girlfriend. I'm sure just banging out some man. Teenage girl for the next 4 years.
That's not good.
And because of the child rape scene that they animated and you get to watch, it was banned in 4 countries, I think.
Wow, well, as it should be.
So, yeah, but it's very violent. Mm. And at the end, she meets a fellow assassin and fucking kills everybody for all the shit they bad things that they did.
Including the police officer.
Oh, yeah.
Guy.
Oh, he gets his end.
So,
yeah.
Was it, like, good? Are you
it was surprisingly good.
Yeah.
I mean, the child rape scene, like, when it you're sucks. Watching it, yeah. they don't like, really... I mean, it's there's no penetration because
still.
It's... No, exactly.
Yeah.
But it takes you a second. You're watching it and you're like, is she... Wait a minute. In your head, you're like, she's animated younger in this. I don't know how much younger.
Sure.
And then as the story goes on, you come to realize definitely 14 years old.
Oh.
Yeah. So, influential.
You
have seen things based on this story in your life.
If people are like ripping things off openly from it. Tarantino.
It
makes sense that he would.
It's totally worth watching and very good. You just gotta get over the child rape.
Just gotta get over it, guys.
That's all you gotta do. Just gotta get over a little bit of child rape.
So you tell me I just gotta get over the child rape. Saying yes, Jim.
Yeah. It's
two-part series.
Unlike Wicked City, which I don't recommend.
Don't even bother.
Recommend. Yeah.
Watch the other ones, not that one.
Watch Kite, though. It's fine. You can get over the child rape. It's not going to hurt you that bad.
You can fast forward it. Just fast forward. You see what it's happening.
It's seriously, it's only like 15 seconds,
it's
too.
And it's over.
It's quick.
And before you know it, you're scored. all right, so what else we got?
That guy also did a Dante's Inferno anime. I guess it's loosely based on the book,
mm-hmm.
which, and then maybe a video game too. There might have been a Dante's Inferno video game that I'm unaware of.
It's called Dante's Inferno.
Yeah, because okay. it's made by some company and then EA, and like the EA logo comes up, and
oh,
I was
wow.
like,
"Yes, yeah, a video game tie-in."
Yeah, but it's there's action, a little bit of nudity, and it's drawn by like 3 or 4 different guys. So like. As the quote unquote episodes go on,
yep.
like as he reaches different levels of hell, the animation style differs. It's kind of unnerving in the beginning, but you get used to it.
Oh, all right. Well, I actually like when different artists come together and like you can see the different styles shifting. And
it was, I mean, it was cool. It was just okay.
Just okay?
Just okay.
Just okay. No raves here for that one.
No, right. Not at all.
Okay.
No, that red line. Yeah. So on YouTube, I watched the original Battle Angel.
Oh, yeah.
Anime?
Oh, yeah? I guess it would have been, because I know it's a manga.
It's only an hour long. It's pretty much just the movie that we saw,
mm-hmm.
minus the rollerball.
Yeah.
It was just okay.
Just okay?
Just okay, yeah. It leaves much to be desired, just like the other movie.
Interesting.
But that was done by a guy named Rintaro, who
okay.
also did stuff on... Robot Carnival, and he's also the guy behind the Galaxy Express 999
which
movies
you last
that
week.
I talked about last week.
Yeah, sure.
And I watched another one of his movies on Tubi called The Dagger of Kamui. It's from 1985, 2 hours, 12 minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How do you spell Kamui?
Kamui.
Okay.
It's a story of betrayal and revenge.
Ooh, classic.
Yeah. So you got, there's, shinobis, cowboys, racist Americans,
mm-hmm.
Mark Twain makes an appearance.
What?
Captain Kidd's treasure, apparently.
Captain Kidd?
You heard me. It's some sort of, it's gotta be some weird alternate history.
Sounds like
where,
it. Sounds
weird. Captain Kidd's treasure is used to fund the end of the shogunate in Japan. Like, the last 45 minutes is like some weird alternate history lesson.
Oh, wow, okay.
So it's a little confusing, but it's fucking beautiful, and it was totally worth the watch.
But a little confusing.
A little confusing at the end. It was weird. Like I said, all of a sudden it's like, real time and real people. Mm-hmm. They're talking about stuff that really happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but Mark Twain was just in Japan.
Hey, maybe he was.
So what the fuck is going on?
He
here?
Traveled. He's like, what's this over here?
I'm just saying, it's weird.
Sake is delicious.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right. Also watched now stuff that's a little more kid friendly.
This one's for the kids.
Watched two 1 hour and 15 minute Hellboy animated movies, voice acting by everybody from the movies. Ron Perlman, Selma Blair, everybody.
Oh, cool.
They were just okay.
Just okay.
Hellboy : Sword of Stones, mm-hmm, and Hellboy : Blood and Iron. One from 2006, one from 2007. They are just all
right. So, yeah, that's right around the time when they were making the, I guess when they made the first movie.
Yeah.
Maybe that's between the first movie. Yeah, perhaps. Something like that. Yeah. Hellboy is fine and all.
I like the universe. I like the characters. It just has to be done right.
It's just, yeah, I mean,
animation leans itself towards it.
The most I've liked it is like the first Hellboy movie. And even that, I'm just like, yeah, this is good. Yeah, this is fun. Mm-hmm. But I've never been like, oh, this is, oh, I love the adventures of Hellboy.
No, exactly. But it came up on my list on Tubi after watching all that animation. So I was like, might as well check it out.
Another secret demon police. Yep. Right? That's what they are. That's what Hellboy BPRD. Is. Yeah, he's a secret demon PI, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
See, maybe that's what we need. We need more secret demon police in the real world to snuff out all the shit that's going on. Maybe that's why the world is such
What if they're demon police fascists? And it's that kind of secret demon police.
Oh, they're like knocking down your door and they're like, you don't... No, that's not good. Yeah, brown shirt demon police? No, it's supposed to be the other way.
And then...
backwards.
I also watched two Ghost in the Shell anime movies on Tubi. I think what they are just condensed versions of
mangas,
the TV series.
Okay.
Because they're each 2 hours and 40 minutes long.
Whoa.
And it's Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, which I think is a TV show. So I think they took like an entire season and condensed it to a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
One of them's called The Laughing Man. Has to do with cyber hackers. Micro machines versus vaccines.
Micro machines, like the tiny little cars?
Like nanites.
Oh, okay.
Versus vaccines and their efficacies.
Okay.
Government conspiracies, cover-ups, and a lot of muddled philosophy. Nowhere near as good as the movies.
Sure, yeah,
And
yeah.
It's the same thing with the second one, Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, Individual 11.
That's like too much.
It has to do with terrorism.
Just give me a part one, part two at this point.
Terrorism and refugees.
Okay.
And it's from a year later.
So being 6 hours worth of stuff. It was just like, yeah.
It was just kind of on. It was one of those type of things.
It's just on. I got shit to do. Exactly. This is on in the background. Let me play some video games and look up. Like, exactly.
Let me stare at my phone and cook some food and fucking maybe take care of something else because this part's boring.
Step outside, smoke a cigarette.
And then I come back and I hear gunshots. I'm like, oh, what's going on?
What I missed? I guess it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Gotcha. All right. So they're just all right. Just okay for those.
And then I also have a list of anime to watch that I can't find currently free streaming. So if it ever comes out,
I'll get to it. You got your own running list of things you want to keep checking out.
Yes. Mostly because the Ninja Scroll guy also made a Highlander anime.
Nice.
Apparently. So
why not?
A hyper-violent, hyper-sexual Highlander anime.
I mean, there's movies, there's a TV show, comics. Why not? There's already so much Highlander stuff. Why not have an anime out there too?
I really want to watch it. Like, of all the things that I've found, like, that's the one because it hits my Highlander button. And it's the guy from Ninja Scroll, so I'm thinking just Ninja Scroll plus Highlander equals.
It should be amazing. did you watch a TV show?
Some of it.
Did you know?
Well, which one? How about that? Because there was,
I think it's just the original Highlander.
There was
series.
The Highlander TV show, and then there was Highlander something something blah 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 with a lady.
Highlander, no, I think it's one with the lady. The singer
or the animated show?
No, the
which was god awful.
The live action one. The singer for Fine Young Cannibals, mm-hmm, Roland Giff is the name. She drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He is also a martial artist, mm-hmm. and he did like 5 episodes of Highlander.
Oh, cool. Yeah, nice to watch Highlander. I'm pretty sure Highlander's streaming for free on something right now.
There you go. So Paul Highlander, the TV series, start watching it. And then one guy, he's like, there can be only one. And he drives me. That's a guy. That's him. All right. There you go. All right. So that's all your stuff. You fell down a hell of an anime wormhole. It wasn't even a black hole. It was a wormhole.
Yeah. I
discovered the secret demon police down there waiting for you.
All sorts of weird fucking tentacle.
They were like,
I didn't want to get. I knew there was like in front of me, there was a cage that has, you know, weird anime stuff behind it.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I try not to go in that cage because it's not a good place to be.
But he walked right into it.
Unbeknownst to me.
You got it.
There it was, in my face.
And then the brown shirt demon police show up and like, we heard you watched Kite. You're like, it was only 15 seconds.
Oh, there was a lot of thing monsters in these movies too. The Thing must have been a very influential movie on anime directors in the 80s.
Very cool.
Because
a lot of
all of them.
Gross, growing monsters.
Growing.
Fleshy.
Weird rib cages that turn into mouths. And
eyeballs
of that
where eyeballs shouldn't be and things like that. That's always fun.
So, tentacles.
I enjoy that kind of stuff.
Tentacle rape.
No,
so.
I mean, there we go. Now we're back to there. okay, let's take a break here. We have Billy D has hit us up with the Death at the Movies. He is covering Fantasia Fest. I should have wrote that down. He's got himself an online press badge for a virtual film festival. He's doing some coverage of that, so we're going to talk about that a little bit here, as well as one of his movie reviews. And then what's he reviewing? Fantasia Fest announcement, and he's reviewing The Pool. The Pool. So listen to Billy D, and then we will be right back with the second half of the show.
Watch a few movies, take a few notes.
Billy D's Death at the Movies. What's up, my dudes? I can't believe it's been over 4 months since I set foot in an office, restaurant, grocery, theater, venue, what have you. Where did this year go? I have to preface this review with a couple of stories. For those of you who don't know me as well as Chris and Drew do, I grew up in a couple places, on the south side of Chicago and in South Miami. At my grandparents' home in Chicago, there was a 10-foot deep in-ground pool. One summer, when I was about 9 or 10, we were opening the pool with my uncles and filling it up. We were having water fights and waiting for the pool to fill. Some of us had gathered in the shallow end and were standing at the lip where it curves down into the deep end. I slipped in. I could swim, that wasn't the issue, but the pool surface was too slick for me to grab onto and pull myself back up, and I couldn't reach the ladder because it wasn't full enough yet. It was maybe a few seconds of panic, but that taught me enough about how dangerous pools can be. And then, a few years later, in Miami as a teenager, I would take my brothers to our neighborhood pool. After one particularly gnarly tropical storm, I was tasked with taking them to the basketball court and then to the pool to get them out of my parents' hair for a couple of hours. There was some debris and stuff floating around the surface, and the gate was all twisted and hanging open, and we were unpacking our stuff, and my brother was gearing up to run and jump in when I saw a shadow in the water, and there was a medium-sized gator in the pool. Nothing happened, I caught him, and we backed away and packed our stuff and went home. Animal control came, and that was that. So yesterday, while eating breakfast, I flipped on Shudder and turned on the Thai thriller, The Pool. And those two personal anecdotes collided in a very unique way. The Pool is a fantastic little survival thriller about a set PA named Day working a commercial shoot in a pool set. The pool location is going to be closed permanently the next day, so they're the last people to use it. This film is built like an elaborate mousetrap. Every single thing you see in these first 20 or so minutes comes into play once the film kicks into gear. The day after the shoot, Day is taking a well-deserved break and napping on a float left over from the shoot. Hashtag set life. The producer comes by to turn on the drain and tell Day to make sure to clean up all the garbage. Day continues his napping, and when he wakes up, the pool is drained too far for him to get out. Day's luck goes from bad to worse. While the pool continues draining, the sun sets, and overnight, a crocodile gets into the pool. And that's when this film becomes a taut survival thriller with ever-rising stakes and ever-cascading setbacks. Sure, there are some wonky effects, but the places it succeeds, characters, stakes, conflicts, setup, payoff, render those less-than-stellar aspects moot. I loved this movie. Maybe it's my weird personal connection to working on commercial sets or the two main hooks of the plot, but I'll probably never fall asleep on a raft ever again. Fuck you, pools, you won't get me. So, check out The Pool, exclusively on Shudder. I'm also pleased to announce that I'll be covering Fantasia Fest 2020 for Cinema Crespedizo. I'm going virtually international, which honestly is where I do my best work outside of the Thunderdome. I'm stoked to be covering Fantasia Fest. This year's lineup of films is spectacular, and everyone behind the scenes, especially the communications team, has been amazing. So special shout out to them. Fantasia kicks off at the end of August, so I'll have some special correspondence coming in a few weeks. Be sure to follow my Fantasia journey on Twitter at I Love Blood. Until then, stay cool, Billy D.
How's it going? We're back. This is it. Thanks, Billy D. We hope you have fun with Fantasia Fest, our first international film festival correspondent.
Is that Fantasia PH or with an F?
With an F.
Okay. That was my question.
Yeah, sure. Asked and answered. Okay, here we go, guys. We got bunch of stuff to talk about. cinemacrespediso@gmail.com is an email you can use to email us, and we will read your emails on the show, just like this email from
Gabe.
What's up, Gabe?
Subject is Binge Dark.
Okay.
So we've got a dark review.
Let's hear it.
So I'm at the season 2 finale, and I really want people to check it out.
Okay.
But I know it's not an easy trek. You gotta buy in on this series. First season is 10 hours, and things get good at episode 5 or 6.
Okay.
The thing has to be binged, because you can easily lose track of characters.
Oh.
I got the dubbing and subtitles going, and I still have to check in with myself to remember who I'm watching.
Like, which one is Dieter?
You really have to trace out, this is the policewoman here, this is the mom, this is the boyfriend, mm-hmm. this is the scientist here, mm-hmm. this is the grandfather, because mm-hmm. when shit starts folding in, it can get confusing.
Oh, that's not good.
But Dark is well written. It looks and feels like the Prisoners movie, has some nice moody music like Legion, and big ideas like Devs. Hmm. Lots of allegory, existential dread, mm-hmm. the good stuff. Spoiler alert, time travel. Think Terminator / John Connor type shit, but more characters, more timelines.
Time loopy.
Also, Winden is a real place in Germany. They've sprinkled a few real world historical references. They make a tiny reference to a time in this German town that borders France. You know, Germany. Overall, the thing should be winning awards. Some of the acting and actors translate well, even for a foreign production.
Mm.
Quarantine is the time to throw yourself into some wild story, since Tenet is being delayed. Give it a try.
Quarantine. Ain't no one quarantine. Everyone's out there giving each other COVID. Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of good stuff about Dark after the season 2. Gonna have to put it on the list. But, you know, it all happens sometimes. A Michael Jordan documentary pops up that he's been waiting for months to watch, and you finally get a chance to see it. Yeah, Dark. You have to start watching. You interested in that at all or no?
I mean, yes and no. I'm interested because everyone seems to be raving about it.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of sci-fi.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've been told it's quite heavy.
Yeah,
and
it's called Dark.
I'm watching...
It's about missing kids and stuff.
...other heavy things right now, so...
Yeah, come on, it can only take so many heavy things.
Yeah.
No matter how black and minimalist your soul is, it can still only take so much...
darkness.
Tentacle rape.
Yeah, no, exactly. You can only take so much darkness before you need...
Look, for this week...
Yin and Yang. I mean,
Kite took a lot out of this week. Between Kite and Wicked City.
Between Quiet and Wicked City, I got fucking drained.
Yeah,
I'm like, God damn it.
It's
monster rape, tentacle rape, and child rape all in one week.
Time for the Not So Late Elmo show, if you know what I'm
exactly.
talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Or can I get a new episode of Holy Moly, please?
Yeah, no new episode this week of Holy Moly. I guess you
and Perry Mason's dark, too, even though it's fucking great. Perry Mason's dark.
Yeah, it is dark. Perry Mason's a dark show. I guess you could watch Flinch for Stupidity if you already
done. I want Rob Riggle.
Yeah, ain't nowhere near a Rob Riggle equivalent. That's a problem. Like, the three hosts in that show are just, like, bland people.
Yeah. See, that's the thing about Holy Moly. I mean, the show isn't that great, but whatever Rob Riggle and Joe Tessitore have going, it fucking works.
They do.
It is so great.
But yeah. That's a huge part of it, for sure. Even the little bit I've seen that helps. on the Flinch show, even though the hosts aren't particularly good, at least at the end of each episode, one of them goes through some sort of like Flinch style punishment. Mm-hmm. That's pretty funny.
Cool.
Anyway, enough of Flinch.
Gabe also sent another email.
What up, Gabe?
Entitled, What Happened to Mr. Crespo? Don't understand that.
Oh, it's a reference to the classic What Happened to Mr. Piper, the 1956 Jimmy Stewart rom-com featuring him, Cary Grant, Ingmar Bergman, Humphrey Bogart, Catherine Bacall, Catherine Hepburn.
I think somebody lives in your walls.
Check 1, 2.
He's got, it looks like, 3 movie reviews. He watched number 70, 71, and 72.
Okay. Someone's hammering next door. Yeah. I wonder if that'll pick up on the mic.
Number 70, The Accountant of Auschwitz Review.
Okay.
It's a really important dive in this one case while giving context into other cases in Germany's justice system post-World War II. I flip between wanting to see justice serve and wanting to lend forgiveness to this old crickety fascist. But here's where I landed. Before there can be forgiveness, there has to be accountability. You can't ignore atrocities. The crux is this guy wasn't a guard or high-ranking officer, but he was the damn accountant. When people were unloaded off trains, he would gather and tally up the valuables and claim them for Hitler. You hear all the pacifist... just following orders bullshit, so there's some of that. But overall, it's a really good documentary and worth a furious watch.
Well, all right. Okay.
So, The Nazi Accountant of Auschwitz.
Fun.
Yeah. He's like, I didn't kill them. I just took all of their money and gave it to Hitler.
This episode has all the dark stuff, man. Okay, next.
Number 71, 20th Century Win. Neat film. About this small little family of people.
That's a good one.
It was arranged weird and ends in a weird spot, but it's a decent watch. I enjoyed it.
That's
Timothy Chalamet.
Annette Bening.
Yeah, Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's an enjoyable one.
And number 72.
Mike Mills, I think, writer-director.
What Happened to Miss Simone?
Documentary, I think. This is a documentary. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of Nina Simone things came out right around the same time.
I rewatched I Am Not Your Negro before this, and James Baldwin makes a quick cameo here, too.
Oh.
I think this would make a good double feature.
Interesting.
This was good that it used a lot of Nina's own voice in interviews to narrate while bringing in her family and fellow musicians. She seemed like a revolutionary ahead of her time. It's weird how Nina and Baldwin seemed to find some kind of peace in leaving the country during civil unrest. The Baldwin move covers the 3 deaths that affected him the most, including MLK, and Nina performed a recording shortly after his death. A lot of the images are strangely familiar to stuff still happening today. It's like a sick documentary remake, a time loop. Watch What Happened to Miss Nina Simone, which, by the way, is a stage name I learned.
Did I know that? I don't know if that was a stage name. All right, there we go. Nina Simone documentary. A couple documentaries and then a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
Some good stuff from Gabe. We appreciate it, buddy. Thank you very much, sir. I think that's it for 2 emails, right?
Yes.
All right. So there's another way you can interact with the show is by going to patreon.com/crespodies. So you can sign up to be a patron. You can leave comments there that no one else will see and no one else will hear the answers to. And you can listen to our show, patreon.com/crespodies. So new episodes every Friday with occasional bonus episodes. They're getting some now. Do you want to know what they are?
A whole bunch of them.
You got to pay up to find out. You can also join our Facebook group, Cinema Crespediso, is the full name of the group, and I try to remember to put up a comment question thread that people can use for us to interact with, just like this.
Cremella got at us.
What's up, Cremella?
He asks, you, Chris,
what's
your secret for cooking tacos?
My secret is to not do it. Let my mom do it.
So Mama's Tacos is your secret.
Mama's Tacos. Like, I ain't making tacos. It's a lot of work. You kidding me? Someone else do it. I'll just assemble them. I can tell you about assembling them. You want to put your protein on the bottom, right?
Okay.
And then if you have some sort of a leafy green, that's good to put on top. Because on top of that, you can put your, like, maybe a thing of guac, some cheese. But then you want it to be stacked pyramid style, layered on top of each other. So then you can get the right picture angle for the gram.
See, I'm a weird guy. I like to put my lettuce on the bottom.
Why are you putting your lettuce on the bottom?
Because lettuce fluffs up so much. So when you put lettuce on the bottom, the meat down there, it compacts it so you don't have the overflowing taco syndrome.
That's why it's in the middle, so that the stuff that's on top is pushing the lettuce down, but the meat on the bottom is lifting it up. Like we lift up each other as a society.
Lettuce on the bottom.
Lettuce on the bottom. All right, so there we go. Let's talk about some... what do you do for... Oh, that's not about this. Okay, so let's talk about some movie news stories here. Rest in peace. We have a whole bunch of rest in pieces. Olivia de Havilland.
Mm.
You know her?
No.
French actress. 104.
Ooh.
So
she lived her life.
She made it. Congratulations. Rest in peace, Regis Philbin.
Yeah, I don't really care about that.
88.
And that's like the American average.
Natural causes, so that's not too bad. Yeah, not too bad. Rest in peace, this guy from, what band was it? Some guy from a band.
All right. Some guy from some band.
Same as Peter Green, Peter Black. Rest in peace, The Tenant, 2020 release date.
That one hurts the most, Chris.
At least in North America. Yeah,
that one hurts the most.
That one is a...
Especially if the rest of the world gets to see it before me. That's really going to hurt the most. Because now I'm just going to feel like I got sloppy seconds.
They're getting it worse.
I got her all used up. Thrown out.
We're getting old news. We're getting old movies by the time it comes out here. But yeah, rest in peace, 2020 movies.
Yeah. Year's over. Can we get to January real quick?
Everything's getting pushed next year. That's just the way it's going to be. For now on. I swear there was another one, another rest in places. I swear to God, like, it just happened. This is news that's gonna... I didn't even pull this story, but this is news that's gonna pop because I just saw it on Twitter this morning. It's, like, breaking this weekend, so people start writing articles, and it'll come out, like, probably tomorrow. Shane Carruth. Ah, man.
What about him?
Can't have heroes, Drew.
No, of course not. What is he? Is he some sort of scummer?
Well, apparently. All right, so he's only made two movies.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Upstream Color.
Yes.
With Amy Simons.
I was going to say, one of them is Primer, which put him on the map. The other one is Upstream Color, which now I understand why people don't work with him, because, man,
well,
as much as I love that movie, what?
Well, so Amy Simons, herself a director, also, as well as an actress, she was in that movie. And weird. So Shane Carruth, his Twitter account that he uses, it's just the Upstream Color one.
Okay.
And he put out a tweet like over the weekend of someone. He's like, someone asked him about the vinyl of the pressing for his soundtrack.
Okay.
And they're like out of print. Like, any way to get them? He's like, yeah, these are hard to get. And it's like, look, a friend of mine actually sent me a copy because I didn't have a copy. So he took a picture of it and he put it online, and underneath the vinyl to the right and obscured but still in a way that can be read what it is a restraining order filed against him by Amy Simons with a court date of this week. And it's very clear. You can see it to yourself. Yeah, you zoom in and it says Amy Simons right there underneath it. Shane whatever Carruth. And
so that got people interested.
That got people's attention. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, so you're a creep, huh? And,
well,
and it's like, what are you trying to do by putting this? Because he's such a meticulous director.
Yeah,
like, ain't no way he's putting that picture out there. It's like, oops, oops, I accidentally tweeted a picture of the restraining order against me. So actually, when you say now, you see why he's hard to why people don't want to work with him. Well, apparently, well,
there's a reason.
There's more numerous reasons why, and it's not just he makes difficult,
weird,
non-mainstream movies. Yeah, it's because he's probably a difficult person to be around, and that's a bummer. It's a real bummer. And now I couldn't watch Upstream Color without thinking, like, oh, how did he treat her? And continues to treat her 9 years later. No. 9 years later, that she has to like file this thing against him. That sucks, doesn't it? So if you're listening to the show now, if you're one of the early downloaders, keep an eye out for that story in the next couple of days. You actually might have just heard it here first on Cinema Crespity. So, speaking of not fans of each other, Mickey Rourke, Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
When The Irishman came out, there were rumors, started by Mickey Rourke, that Robert De Niro froze Rourke out of the casting process of that movie.
Okay.
And Mickey Rourke, for some reason, was like, I should have been in that movie.
Fuck you.
You know, he's not Italian or anything. It's not like he has a history of being in mafia movies.
Yeah, no, and on top of it, you made some poor plastic surgery choices, buddy. Oh, yeah, no, so looks, you no longer look good on film.
Looks terrible. Looks absolutely terrible. Unless he's playing like
a beat up wrestler who's supposed to have fuck face.
Or what's this guy? Sin City.
Yeah.
Marv.
Yeah.
Here's Mickey Rourke. A friend of mine just recently told me that a few months back you're quoted as saying to newspapers, Mickey Rourke's a liar. He talks all kind of shit. He's talking about Robert De Niro. Listen, Mr. Tough Guy in the movies, you're the first person that ever called me a liar and it was in a newspaper. Let me tell you something, you punk ass. When I see you, I swear to God on my grandmother, on my brother, and all my dogs. He has a lot of dogs.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
I'm going to embarrass you severely, 100%.
Cool.
Of course, everyone else involved. Let me see. Here we go. This is Ellen Lewis, casting director of The Irishman. Mickey Rourke was never asked to be in The Irishman, nor was he ever even thought of, discussed, or considered. To be in the movie. So keep an eye out for Rourke v. De Niro.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Battle of the Old Men. Meanwhile, De Niro, man, he pulled some shit a week or two ago where articles were coming out with headlines. I like De Niro, too, but it's just so stupid. Articles come out, De Niro's finances wrecked by COVID-19 pandemic. I'm like, oh, shit, what's going on here? I click on it.
Plus, he probably had stuff in production that got stalled.
Not even that much. So, I mean, he does have a lot of business interests surrounding the Tribeca Film Festival and all this stuff. So, restaurants, he has some restaurants.
Oh, that's going to hurt right now. Yeah,
those things are hurting. So, this story is coming from a filing in his ongoing divorce case where he his lawyer is arguing that he is making considerably less money this year than past years, which he is. So for this year, he's expected to only clear a mere $7.5 million.
Okay.
Poor guy. He's still making $7 million a year, right? So they want to then lower his wife's credit card allowance from $100K a month to $50K a month.
Yes. I'm sorry, cunt. If you can't live on $50K a month, there's something wrong with you.
That's just a credit card allowance. Who knows what other
exactly. Type of... Yeah. Yeah. No, fuck you.
So, but it's funny. There were his finances are destroyed by COVID, and it's like he's still making $7.5 million.
None of my restaurants are making money right now. None of my productions are making money right now. Yeah, no, totally, yes. Okay.
Olivia de Havilland was in Gone with the Wind. Throw that out there real quick. Sam Esmail, Mr. Robot, et cetera, et cetera. What's
Homecoming.
He's got is this a show or a movie? He's got a novel that will be published this fall, so it hasn't even come out yet. And it's called Leave the World Behind. And it's going to be a Netflix movie starring Julia Roberts and Denzel Washington.
Cool! We can get Denzel into that S-mail fucking...
Yes, into all of it. So, yeah. It's the first time starring together since the Pelican Brief, although this time they'll be on opposite sides of a...
Cool, even better.
So, let me see. Here's the Amanda and Clay's aspirational vacation with their teenage children is interrupted by the arrival of a middle-aged couple who own the holiday home and who have fled an unprecedented blackout in the city. When the internet, television, and radio stop working, as does the landline, they have no way of finding out what is happening. A strange sonic boom shatters the peace of the countryside. Animals start to migrate in strange ways. Physical and mental health of the families begin to disintegrate. The renters, upscale and white. Owners, upscale and black. Issues of race and class become distractions to the more alarming things that all happen around them. So Julia Roberts is renting a house with her family.
I was about to say, so it sounds like...
Denzel shows up with his wife.
Parasite meets Apocalypse.
Yes. Yeah, the Parasite Apocalypse. And Denzel's like, this is my... We gotta go. This is my home. Julia's like, we can't go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Sam Esmail, so should be good.
Yeah, should be.
Could be fun. The Cobra Kai coming to Netflix by the end of August. I think August 24, seasons 1 and 2 of Cobra Kai will be on Netflix ahead of season 3.
Finally get to watch it.
So, yep, just putting that out there for people where they can watch it. Paul Thomas Anderson, he of Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Inherent Vice, was his most recent, the Phantom Thread, has his next movie lined up. And it sounds kind of Richard Linklater-ish.
Okay.
It's a coming-of-age story about... his hometown, where he grew up, San Fernando Valley, California, during the 1970s, and it's really not much else is known about.
I was about to say that. I mean, that sounds like his type of movie. It's like, we're going to find some strange plot thread set in this area and go.
It's going to look gorgeous, and we're going to go off on the production design and all this stuff.
I wonder who's going to play what.
Yeah, who could be? I mean, we could bring back Marky Mark. Who's he worked with in the past? Daniel Day is
Marky
done.
Marky Mark in the San Fernando Valley. No, thank you. I don't need that Boston accent. Nah, that's a bullshit.
So you mentioned Rep 2020 for Tenet, and
everything.
It's coming out internationally, so people are like, "Well, when's it dropping on streaming? When's that fine going to happen?" The HBO Max boss, who's working for Warner Brothers, really. It's really Warner Brothers when you say HBO Max. And CEO of AT&T, John Stackey. He said during a conference call, where's the exact quote? "Is it going to happen with a movie like Tenet or something like Wonder Woman? I'd be very surprised if that would be the case. In fact, I can assure you with Tenet, that's not going to be the case.
Yes.
The longer this goes on, there's going to be some content on the margins that we're going to look at and say maybe better served to be distributed in another contract or a different contract. I love that we have that option now. I love the reality that we've been able to build a platform where we can get leverage, blah, 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 blah." So he's saying, yes, other things can and will be plopping on streaming.
But not Tenet.
Tenet is not. Good. When he goes Tenet and Wonder Woman, well, Tenet, no. So Wonder Woman,
maybe. It all depends on how long this thing goes for. They already have a set date. We're like, listen, if we don't open by this point, we have no choice.
We
cannot push everything else back far enough.
All of our other productions are being pushed back. Yeah, it's all about. And then depending on the studio, how much money they have invested, how much money they think it's actually going to make in theaters. So Warner Brothers seems to be like, we're holding off on theater. Paramount, they are holding off. A Quiet Place 2 got pushed to next year, and Top Gun Maverick got pushed to next year. So those aren't coming on stream anytime soon.
I mean, seriously, for Warner, I'm sure it's going to be a whole thing. Like, do we have enough on HBO Max right now? Are people begging for something new on HBO?
Yeah,
if
sure.
so, then maybe we might have to sacrifice.
Yeah, that's absolutely another possibility. Smaller companies like Orion, who, you know, revitalized Orion Pictures.
Yeah. So they're just hurting.
They're hurting. They can't just keep sitting on the small handful of movies that they have, so they had to figure something out. So that's why in September we're getting a VOD Bill and Ted Face the Music.
That's fine.
So that's officially coming out on VOD. And again, went back to when they announced Bill and Ted 3 last year.
Chris,
I don't even think it's going to be a very good movie.
I mean,
and it could have made necessarily that much money.
There's no George Carlin, so
there could be a CG, some sort of. They'll do something.
CG Rufus.
There'll be a CG Rufus, or maybe it's just Rufus's son or something like that. Rufus's daughter. Yeah, I don't know, Drew. Bill and Ted Face the Music comes out September VOD, September 1st, as a matter of fact, so it's like Labor Day weekend.
That'll give us something to do.
In a month, we'll be reviewing Bill and Ted Face the Music, it looks like. And then we'll be like, eh.
It was fine.
How many eyes will we get on the final scale?
I'm calling it right now. One, maybe two.
One, maybe two eyes? I hope it's at least good. I want the movie to be good.
I'm calling, yeah.
You're calling a fine. That doesn't mean we're going to go into a preconceived notion and then like we're squeezed into a fine box.
No.
We're just being honest with ourselves.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen the marketing.
Exactly. So have I. And unfortunately, Keanu Reeves is the worst part of it. Everything else around it seems fine, but Keanu just seems...
Oh, Keanu. We need a beard and a gun in your hand.
I know, exactly. Right? I think... We might be in a post babyface Keanu.
We're beyond that. We are beyond babyface Keanu. GLAAD, the AKA the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. They do this every year. They go through entertainment. They go through all the studios. They look at their output. They see what kind of gay representation they have, and they rate them. Disney, being the biggest and biggest producer of content, making the most money last year for 2019, got a GLAAD rating of poor.
That sounds right.
This is the eighth year GLAAD has done this. For a majority of its annual reports, Disney has been given an even worse failing rating, so poor is actually better. No. So they've actually done better. Last year was a failure. This year is only poor. So they're improving. They released nearly 20 movies in 2019. Let's see if they have some breakdown in stats here. I should have looked at that ahead of time. But I did not. According to the organization, Studio has only produced 4 gay-inclusive films ever, which are 2013's Delivery Man, 2014's Muppets Most Wanted, 2017's Beauty and the Beast, and Lucasfilm's 1985 biopic Mishima, A Life in 4 Chapters, which is before Disney even acquired it. That's a Paul Schrader. So a real lack of gay representation. Warner Brothers and Sony also received poor ratings.
I mean, I hate to be, you know,
be that guy.
Disney is known as quote unquote kid friendly, and for the longest time, gay and kid friendly have not been intertwined as one thing in American culture.
Correct.
So
the gay quote lifestyle to be gay has been deemed to be this is not for families.
Correct.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's insidious.
I mean, I blame Disney, but I also blame the culture that Disney.
Sure.
Was created.
A handful of 2019 movies that did pass GLAAD's, the GLAAD test. Warner Brothers, The Good Liar, which we saw, not very good. Isn't Romantic, It Chapter 2. Sony's A Dog's Way Home and Charlie's Angels. No major studio ranked higher than Insufficient. Lionsgate led the pack with 5 passing movies. Anna, Bombshell, Cold Pursuit, 5 Feet Apart, and Perfect Strangers. In the next year, Disney will reportedly explore LGBTQ storylines and The New Mutants and The Eternals. So we'll see how those go.
Yeah.
New Mutants supposedly still sitting on that August 28 release date. I think that's going to be...
August 28 VOD.
No, drive-ins.
Okay.
I think they're just going to go ahead and screw it. Drive-in theaters. Let's get our, quote, theatrical release out of the way. And then we can put this thing on a streaming service.
You should put it on a streaming service a year ago.
Probably shouldn't even have been made. It was supposed to be the start of a horror trilogy, according to Josh Boone.
No longer happening.
Yeah, before Disney bought it all out. this is funny. You mentioned Battle Angel, right? James Cameron gave that to Robert Rodriguez to make because he's too busy making Avatar movies. He's making Avatar movies for the rest of his life. They all got pushed back an additional year thanks to COVID. Mm-hmm. So now December 2022 is the... Do you mean the next one, the 13 years after the original? The Avatar movies, Drew, are looking so good.
Mm-hmm.
Even James Cameron is shocked.
Cool.
Imagine being like, my art is so incredible, even I can't believe
it. Oh my God, it's beautiful.
So he says, I deal with images in that world every single day. And there are some days when I look at those images and say, this is really amazing. I'm not patting myself on the back with that comment.
Yeah, he is.
You sort of are, James. You sort of are. But the Avatar movies.
That's good. It's good to know that even at this point in time in your career, you can still be inspired by your own work.
Yeah, that I can still inspire myself. Steven Seagal on the set of The Glimmerman. That's our August Steven Seagal movie coming up in a few weeks at patreon.com/crespedisto. People can hear that. He was late to set one day. Finally, he shows up on set carrying a script. Keenan Ivory sees him. I think Keenan Ivory is the one who tells the story. No, Damon? Keenan. And Seagal's like, sorry, I'm late. I was just reading this screenplay. It's the best screenplay I've ever read in my life. Keenan Ivory goes, oh yeah, who wrote it? And Seagal goes, I did. I wrote it.
That sounds about right.
That sounds accurate. Free Guy. Remember that movie?
Yeah. It's supposed to come out this summer. It's
supposed to come out sometime this year.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever going
to
come out.
It was supposed to be a summer movie. It looks like a summer movie.
It does look like a summer movie, especially when we started seeing marketing for it.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds film.
Exactly. Ryan Reynolds action comedy.
Directed by Sean Levy, who, not very good. Best thing Sean Levy has done is he's produced and directed a few episodes of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But his movie output is like, oh boy.
Marketing for this movie was good. I'll give it that.
Well, he directed that. And they apparently like working together so much that they have signed up to work again together on another project that just got sold to Netflix. And it's called Our Name is Adam. and it's a time travel movie.
Okay.
It was with Paramount originally. It was supposed to star Tom Cruise at one point. It's a time travel that would see two versions of Adam teaming up for some unknown reason. Skydance Productions, so on board as a producer.
Okay.
And apparently he spent a lot of money to get it.
Cool. We'll see how it goes.
So we got a Ryan Reynolds time travel comedy. I don't know. It's time travel. Time travel is fun. People like it. Oh, speaking of Tom Cruise, space movie.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a few steps forward. He has his director, right? It's the guy who did... it's Doug Liman,
yeah.
Right, who did Edge of Tomorrow with him and American Made. They have NASA and SpaceX on board. Mm-hmm. They came up with a $200 million budget. Tom Cruise had to take home 30 to 60 of that for both his acting paycheck and producing paycheck. And now it's looking like... what's this next latest development? Oh, they are officially talking to Universal Pictures to pick up that bill.
There you go.
To pay that $200 million.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can get the studio on board, they secure the money, move forward with this shot in space action movie.
Cool. I'm down.
It's going to be, come on.
Sounds like fun. I'm ready.
If he's going to die doing something,
then this is better be fucking it.
He better blow up the International Space Station by accident making this movie. A hell of a lot more than breaking an ankle,
yeah,
on the set of Mission Impossible. Your boy BKV.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned a story before, but I got a few more deets, or it's got some updating. Brian K. Vaughan has a series currently called Paper Girls. It is about four newspaper delivery girls in 1988 who inadvertently get caught up in a conflict between warring factions of.
I don't know.
Time travelers.
Okay, there we go.
So more time traveling. And it's officially been picked up by Amazon.
All right.
They put in the full series order. So we'll be getting, I believe, our first BKV series?
I mean, someone still did Why the Last Man, right? That's coming
out. Hasn't
been
done yet.
Oh, it's not done yet?
Still, it's pre-production hell.
I mean, I'm sure some of his stories have bled
somewhere
onto their, because he's done work for DC and Marvel, so
sure. So one of his something that he wrote.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this is the first thing that he like created that's getting made, being co-produced by Legendary Television and Plan B.
Cool.
So there you go.
That should be fun.
So that's for you, Drew. Some BKV.
We'll see how it goes.
Dave Franco is going to play Vanilla Ice in the 19 upcoming biopic on the 1990s rapper.
Okay, I'm sold. Yep. I can see Def Franco's Vanilla Ice.
And it's he's name checking the disaster artist as,
yeah,
like, you know, we didn't make fun of Tommy Wiseau in that, we showed the artist as he was, and then the humor just came out of all that.
Same
that's
thing.
The actual situation.
Yeah.
So they want to do the same thing with,
sure,
Vanilla Ice with Rob Van Winkle.
Yes. Uh huh.
This guy's name.
I know.
That's a crazy name.
Yep.
I pulled the Bill and Ted story twice, it looks like, by accident.
All right.
HBO limited series making its debut this fall. It's called The Third Day. It's a 6-episode limited series. Episodes 1 through 3 will star Jude Law. Episodes 4 through 6 will star Naomi Harris, and they're both written and directed by different people. The first 3 episodes are called Summer. The next 3 are called Winter. And what it is about is in the summer episodes, Jude Law shows up to this little, like, island, and the inhabitants there have their own, like, weird rituals and their own way of life. So he's, like, kind of figuring out what they're doing, but he's also, getting over some grief, or he's getting over something, personal demons. And then the last 3 episodes are about, I think it's his wife or girlfriend going to that island to, like, what happened to my
husband?
What happened to my husband? Where is he?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's got, being this, described as sort of a Midsummer Wicker Man type of thing.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, sounds about me.
Yeah, I'm down.
Shit, that sounds good to me. Speaking of time loops, this is a very time loop heavy
of sorts. Yeah,
the news section. Terminator Genesis. Remember that one?
Yeah.
It ended with John Connor being infected by nanobites.
Yep.
The Skynet nanobites. He was half Terminator, half man.
I am the bad guy.
Yeah, I'm the bad guy, but I'm also a good guy. So the co-writer of Terminator Genesis has revealed what that they had a few drafts done of the script for the second movie and an outline for the third. So he went ahead here and described
what would have happened,
what the trilogy would have been. And he says they're introducing new characters. They dealt more with how the future and where Skynet comes from, what that sort of time loop is. The Matt Smith character, it became much more of a focus. They were probably a little trippier, stood away from a T2 a little more, started having their own identity, sort of an interesting escaping the fatalistic part of it. Who knows, maybe one day they'll release it as a comic or something.
Okay.
John Clark said in 2018, what I remember was that the second one was going to be about John's journey after he was taken by Skynet, like going down to what he became, half machine, half man. That's where the second one was going to start. And okay. That's about all I knew.
So it would have been like the backstory.
It could have been interesting. It sounds like they could have gone somewhere different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of the problem with Genesis was that it was so much like trying to recreate things from the first movie. I was like, hey, you sort of have to be your own movie, too. Sounds like they were setting that up in a cool way, but the movie just didn't work out.
I mean, if they wanted to... Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to set up your own three-way movie, mm-hmm. don't start off in the middle where the story's just like everything else. Give me that first movie instead of the second movie. Make it the first movie.
Make it different
first. What is this weird movie? Oh, yeah. My God, it's fucking John Connor?
And then swing it back around. I agree. Edgar Wright has a ghost movie set up called Stage 13, and it's about a haunted film studio.
That could be fun. That could be a lot of fun.
That could be good. Let's see, it's a young aspiring director who's plucked from obscurity and hired to direct a movie on a major film studio backlot, only to discover the only reason he was given the chance in the first place is because the soundstage is haunted and the studio head is trying to get rid of the ghost, an aspiring actress who still desperately wants to be a star. It's a Stage 13 is among the short stories in a 2019 book, Hits and Misses, and it is described as more comedic than frightening. So, yeah. And then Last Night in Soho is his next movie, which is a straight-up, like, thriller horror film type thing. Like a 70s British paranoia horror film.
Okay.
So maybe it'll be, like, a nice balance between, like, this next one comes to be more of
this is scary, and this is kind of scary, but more funny.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of bringing it back a little bit to the comedy. And then, finally, some Billy Eichner news.
Okay.
All right.
Billy on the Streets?
Billy on the Street. We need some more Billy on the Streets. First off, Billy on the Street. Well, Billy, he's getting off the streets.
Okay.
He's getting into the movies. He is apparently signed on. What is this for? Movie or TV? He got cast to play Paul Lynde. For people who don't know, Paul Lynde is a staple of 50s TV. Popped up on like Bewitched, a lot of Hollywood Squares type stuff. And since here, Eichner is keen to star in the role, telling Deadline in an interview that he hopes will encourage the industry to cast more queer actors as gay icons. Quote, one of the main reasons I want to do this is because gay actors are never, hardly ever, I should say, allowed to play our own gay icons. Harvey Milk, Freddie Mercury.
I was going to say.
Elton John.
Yeah.
Where are the gay actors? When it really comes to some big project about a gay icon, the one everyone's throwing awards at, we love the spectacle of rewarding a straight actor for quote unquote transforming himself into a gay person.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So he's got this in the works. Billy Eichner, I was also listening to a podcast, Pete Holmes' podcast, You Made It Weird, where he says that they were talking about just industry. It was the Mutual Admiration Society for mm-hmm. sure for 2 hours. You're great. But he mentioned, word got out. I mean, I haven't been allowed to talk about this yet. He is working on, he wrote a movie, took it to Judd Apatow, and Judd Apatow's producing it, maybe even directing it. So he's getting the Pete Davidson, Amy Schumer treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's writing it. He wrote it. He's starring in it. And apparently, according to Pete Holmes, he was telling Billy, I heard about the table read for this and that it killed better than any table read has ever killed in the history of Hollywood. So Billy Eichner is coming up a little bit now here and getting a couple of movies.
Yeah.
He also, even though it's all from home, the at-home bullshit, he sat in, quote-unquote, as the host for Late Show. Which one is it? The Jimmy Kimmel one.
Okay.
The Jimmy Fallon one. The Jimmy, one of them.
One of the Jimmys.
One of the dummies. But he sat in as host, and for like a week at least, I think. And it's pretty cool to see him.
Well, good for him.
Blowing up a bit.
Hopefully he'll produce some good work.
Hey, I think he will.
Of crap.
I think he will, because I liked everything I've seen him in so far. I'm a Billy on the Street fan. And yeah, so we'll see. We'll see how all that breaks out.
Cool.
And that's it for the episode. We time looped our way out of this one. Enough of the time travel, enough of the tentacles. This one is one for the books, I gotta say. Not looking forward to revisiting anytime soon.
No.
But Drew, thank you for your participation. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Yeah, buddy.
And listeners, you are welcome for this week's show. And we'll be back next week with 395. Keeping it alive. Peace out. Oh, wait, no. No. Oh, so Black Lives Matter. I can see. That's why I wrote it down, Drew. You can take your headphones off.
Come on.
Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag arrest the cops who killed, murdered Breonna Taylor. It's still out there, man. That's fucked up. Kill your masters. Eat the rich. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
A PFT Media production.